The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Ulster Bank. For when you want business experts that get to know you, not just your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/businessmatters.
Well, British Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal suffered a crushing defeat in a historic House of Commons vote on Tuesday. But how will the tale unfold on the Brexit battlefield? Joining us from the studio in Belfast is Adrian Houston, tax consultant and former tax inspector, Nicola Byrne, former president of the Irish Exporters Association, and I'm also joined by economist David McWilliams. You're all very welcome to the programme. Adrian, if I could go first to you, you're a Brexit supporter and a member of a UK pro-Brexit business group, the Alliance of British Entrepreneurs. From your perspective, looking at things now, what do you want to see Theresa May do next?
Okay, well, there isn't time for her to resign, so we'll park that one because she's been a great disappointment. So what I think we need for her to do is to absolutely keep no deal on the table, because after all, you don't go in to buy a used car and tell the salesman, well, look, I am going to buy it, we just need to talk about the details, but I will buy it before I walk out. So we have to have that on the table. I think the best option is for us to go for the WTO Brexit. That's a nice clean break. And what people don't mention enough is the provision under the WTO rules whereby you can have 10 years of tariff-free trading after we leave, with 10 years in which to come up with our free trade agreement with the UK, with the EU. This is set out in Article 24 of their General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and it means we have tariff-free trade, exactly the same tariffs with the Europe as we currently have, for up to 10 years while we sort it out.
And that would mean no new free trade deals for 10 years also, wouldn't it?
No, that's not my understanding. My understanding is that we're free to make our deals. Meanwhile, we're negotiating our deal with Europe, but we have left Europe, and so we're free to make our own deals, because that is an essential part of Brexit.
But you wouldn't be fearful of a no-deal exit happening?
Not at all. I think the way we are sitting at the moment, it is the most preferable option, because anything else moves us back towards some sort of a ridiculous fudge, which is what May's deal currently is, or a version of that.
I want to bring
or going into a referendum, or putting back Article 50, which would be a snub in the face of the British electorate.
Nicola Byrne, when it comes to the backstop, and this is something that is beginning to be debated here in Ireland a bit, has the Irish government pushed too hard on the backstop? Because the backstop is about, you know, preventing a hard border in Ireland, and at the end of the day, by pushing very hard, if it results or contributes in some way to a no-deal Brexit, we might have overplayed our hand.
I think that's rubbish. I think that's total and utter rubbish. The value of trade alone, in every other direction out of the UK into Europe, has paled in significance to the amount of trade that happens from Ireland across that border. So it's not realistic. Although, you know, it's large to us, and, you know, there's 72 million every year trading back and forth to the UK.
Or 72 billion.
72 billion, sorry. You're right, it's a huge amount of money. But in reality, as much comes in as goes out. You know, we're not, the deficit isn't that much. It's kind of close enough to equal. The real problem here is that there won't be a no deal, because reality has to kick in, or at least you'd hope it has to kick in. And that, you know, everyone's entitled to do what they politically need to do, but nobody needs to get hurt in terms of trade. And at the moment, there is a huge risk to a lot of people having to suffer and do all this work. And the danger is that if we get through all this, the bits that we don't talk about, the soft emotions, the amount of pain that this has put everybody through in Ireland.
But when you say reality will have to, when you say reality will have to kick in, I presume maybe Adrian or someone from a Brexit perspective would say that a WTO and a no deal Brexit could be a reality that, from a UK point of view, wouldn't be that bad.
Well, it would be that bad, because you genuinely could stop trucks at borders, and you genuinely will have an issue getting stuff in and out of the UK. And, you know, it's in nobody's interest to hurt everybody on the street. I don't understand the politics of that.
Dave McWilliams, when you put this in context and you look at the coming days and weeks, and time is ticking by here, Theresa May, it seems to me, has an option to move or to stick closer to a hard Brexit by trying to stick with the deal, or threatening the no deal deal scenario, or she has the option of moving a little bit more towards a soft Brexit. The rhetoric is that by opening up talks with other parties, she may be moving towards a soft Brexit. But politicians in the House of Commons are saying that in the last 24, 48 hours, there isn't really much sign.
Well, I think since Tuesday, British politics has changed completely. Up until Tuesday, the Prime Minister was kind of in control, or at least seemed to be in control, was originating the ideas. That's the most important. Who originates the ideas? I think since then, it's very, very clear that there isn't enough parliamentary support for no deal. That's number one thing that has come out. Number two thing that has come out is that because of the defeat and because of going back to Parliament, Theresa May has opened up the middle ground, which is your sort of social democratic Labour, the Tony Blair Labour Party, which is still the vast majority of parliamentarians, and what used to be described as the One Nation Tories, the sort of Ted Heath Tories, which is largely the UK cabinet. Now, this is the centre ground, and the centre ground realise, A, they don't want no deal, OK? B, they do want to deliver on Brexit. As Adrian said, there is an obligation to deliver on what the British people voted for. And C, they realise that they have to find this centre ground, which brings the Scottish Nationalists on side, the Liberal Democrats on side, the centre ground Labour. So my reading of the situation is that the UK now is going to compromise, that the ERG and the DUP's position has been weakened profoundly by the vote. They now have power, but that power is only in what I would, it's not Brexit power, it's actually vote of confidence power. So they now have power over the next 6 or 7 weeks to side with if the Labour Party continue
okay,
to
well,
try.
Let me ask.
But it's a very important point to make that no deal Brexit is much less likely now than it was a week ago.
Adrian Houston, what about that point? If it moves towards the middle ground, what about those very committed, strong Brexiteers, particularly within the Conservative Party? What will they do? And as a Brexiteer yourself, how would you feel about that shift towards a softer Brexit?
It'll be very interesting to see how it does move. As a Brexiteer, I would be totally against that shift. And these middle ground MPs, and David identifies them absolutely correctly, you know, the majority of the British Parliament, they themselves campaigned for or voted for Remain. What these guys need to remember then is in some time in the future, they are going to be seeking re-election. And if they go back to their constituents and said, we would like to be the Conservative or the Labour candidate, and their constituency says, well, hold on a minute, we voted Leave and you did everything you did to make that not happen. They may find they're not selected as the candidates, and if they were selected, they may find they're not voted in. So the MPs need to think very carefully at the stance they're taking.
I think
because
that
they've got the British public against them.
Yeah,
I think that threat is futile. And I think the problem is that Theresa May's statement where 80% of people at the last general election voted for Brexit to continue isn't true. And it doesn't show the nuances within. So we have people for and against Theresa May, and we have people for and against Brexit. And so that's four positions that they're holding at the moment. And so the problem is with a re-election, when you only have two major parties and both sides have camps within them that want to Brexit and both sides have to Remain, there is no clear cut. And maybe in time, politics, like, you know, people don't see the Lib Dems as strong enough economically to represent them. But it is the only shelter for them. And if you look at Theresa May's majority, it dipped greatly. And that's why we have the DUP there. I don't believe that old politics threat of, you know, if you vote against us, you're going to be elected out. They don't have any choices in the UK.
We really have to focus on the next, let's say, 10 weeks. OK, because that's absolutely crucial. The way in which British politics evolved last week is really, really important because it's a total change. Because once you take away the absolute power of the British are very interested in the way they seem to love this idea of the all-powerful prime minister, the sort of imperious, haughty prime minister who comes in and kind of with the cabinet bashes the parliament around. Now, what has actually happened is that has changed because the all-powerful prime minister is gone. And now what she is a facilitator of a deal. And when you go to the idea that Parliament is trying to, in a way, grope its way to a middle ground, all sorts of horse trading will involve, something that we're much more aware of here in the Republic, the way our democracy works, the way German democracy works, the way French democracy works. So my sense, maybe not French, Italian democracy works, my sense is that over the course of the next few weeks, the hard Brexit position will become increasingly shrill.
And does that hope, mean,
for
David,
example,
in
that
your
Germany
view,
will do a deal? Yes, sorry.
In your view, you don't see a second referendum as a realistic option, something that you think will...
I would go back to Adrian on this. I think he's right. I think the second referendum is very dangerous in the UK. And the reason is the following, is the UK is a very, very split society now in terms of England, because we're really talking about England. The society might not necessarily be able to deal with a second referendum in the sense that it's still highly divisive. What is much more likely is that if you're a parliamentarian, you now have power in your hands. And it's much more likely that you will take your responsibility as a parliamentarian to try and get a deal done. And that deal, it's really important to say, looks much less like a hard Brexit today than it did last Saturday morning.
I agree.
Okay. Adrian, final question to you. I've heard it suggested that in the event that there isn't a Brexit at all, that we could see a breakaway among the Conservative Party, that the harder Brexiteers might actually split from the party. Do you think that's realistic?
I don't think it's particularly likely. I think what we're probably more likely to see is a rise yet again of UKIP as being a truly pro-Brexit party. I mean, it is also said that because Labour is also very split on the issue, as Nicola said, we could actually see Parliament evolve into two completely different parties, one that wants to be associated with Europe and one that doesn't.
Nicola,
So there could be a lot of change ahead.
I just want to bring in Nicola. A final point to you, Nicola. What's your prediction on this?
I predict there'll be definitely no deal, and I predict they will find the middle ground, but I would still prefer to them not to Brexit at all, but okay. That's our preference.
Well, we'll have to see how that goes. Thank you very much to Adrian Houston, Nicola Byrne and David McWilliams. Thank you very much for joining us